Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up Monday, by the way, we will have a Euro round robin. Why is Ireland falling to deficit fever while the French protest raising their retirement age to 62? We were just talking about 70 for this country in the last segment. They've got people in the streets over raising the retirement age to 62 in France. And more money news from the Eurozone that matters to us. Check us out on Monday. Now, after running on a platform of cleaning up Albany, Governor-elect Andrew Cuomo is starting to form the team that he thinks will bring about that change. As of earlier this week, he had named 104 people to various transition and advisory committees, and those decisions are beginning to shed some light on how exactly the Albany cleaning process might come about. While that team begins to take shape, we are joined by Wayne Barrett, senior editor at The Village Voice, to drill down on what Cuomo's choices signal about his upcoming administration, and also to drill down on the lobbyists lying in wait for Andrew Cuomo that Wayne has written about in The Voice. Hi, Wayne.
Hi, Brian.
So first on the picks, have you been surprised by anybody named to any of these transition teams, or don't transition teams matter?
Well, I only sent in one name, Rudy Giuliani, to head the public safety committee. So I got what I wanted. No.
Yes, sir. Yes. No, knowing what you've written about Rudy Giuliani in the past, at least I know that was a joke. Go ahead.
Yes, I don't really have any problem with what he's done there. To me, when he says they're not going to do any policy, that's usually part of the role of a transition committee, so I find that a little bit odd, although their policies are very rarely, the policies that transitions recommend very rarely wind up mattering much. So this very elaborate rollout of a transition team is really all about trying to collect resumes. That's what he says himself. That's what his office says. So it's a very limited role for this broad transition team that he's put together. It's not only racially diverse, which Reverend Sharpton was out there even before he named it, questioning whether or not it would be racially diverse. It's not only racially diverse, it's very politically diverse. There's an awful lot of Republicans on it, but I don't know what it means. To me, it's a large apparatus with a very limited purpose.
And transition teams are often nothing more than symbolic in terms of the names on them, and then what really matters is to see who he names to the real functional cabinet positions and other positions that are important. How about your article?
What really matters, Brian, is who he's listening to right now, because mm-hmm. he has this very tight circle around him, many of them left over from his father's days, and some of them brand new folks that he's dealt with and who work with him at the Attorney General's office. He has a very narrow circle of maybe half dozen people. And, those are the people who are really helping to shape what this government is going to look like, I think.
Who's the most important of those people who nobody ever heard of?
Well, I think people have heard of Michael Del Judas. He was the chief of staff to Governor Mario Cuomo and also very, very close at a high level with Governor Hugh Carey. And he's an elder statesman now, but he's attached to Andrew's ear. I think Del Judas is the most formidable, but there are a number of other people. Howard Glaser worked in a mid-level position with Mario Cuomo, but went with Andrew to HUD, was with him at HUD almost throughout that period of time. He's a Washington-based lobbyist. That's a little disturbing. But he is also someone that Andrew relies on greatly. Drew Zambelli was with the former governor. He listens when you talk in the intro here about cleaning up the government. He has two people who he has established extremely close relationships within the Attorney General's office that I fully expect to go to Albany with him. Linda Lacewell was the principal person who did the pension fraud case, which, I'm an old man now, Brian. I think it's probably the most important public corruption case ever brought by a New York State Attorney General, the pension fraud case. The scope of it is enormous.
Into the New York State Comptroller's Office, that one.
Right, right. And now that both Allen Hevesy, the former comptroller, and Hank Morris, the fixer at the center of that scandal, who was the political advisor to Allen Hevesy, now that both of them have pled guilty, it's really It's a monumental achievement, and Linda Lacewell was the driving force behind it, and apparently she is going to play a key role in developing the ethics position and the ethics agenda of the new administration. Ben Lasky is the other guy who actually is in a higher position in the AG's office, left the AG's office, took a leave to work with Andrew in the campaign, and is someone that I think Andrew listens to. He used to work for Chuck Schumer. He's an extremely skillful guy. I've met him a few times. I think these are going to be the main people he brings with him. I would not be surprised if Robert Megna, the current budget director under Governor Patterson, I would not be surprised if he hangs on to his job. I think he's someone that the Cuomo people respect.
Wayne Barrett from The Village Voice with us on WNYC. Last week, you wrote a piece about the lobbyists lying in wait for Andrew Cuomo. Who does he have to fear, or who's out to manage his agenda in ways that he doesn't want to manage it?
Well, you know, the lobbyists are such an extraordinary force in Albany. We have the highest number of lobbyists per legislator of any state capital in the United States. In fact, we have twice as many lobbyists as the second highest state per legislator. We have over 6,000 registered lobbyists, so it's an army up there. And, you know, there are some major, major players that have been there a while that are part of the Cuomo retinue. You know, probably the single two most important names that are attached to lobbying firms are, you know, that are this close to Andrew Cuomo are John Marino, who is the managing partner at Dan Quara's Associates, and Jennifer Cunningham, who we all know is someone who managed the Attorney General campaign in 2006 and is sort of the mystery woman of Albany, once married to Eric Schneiderman, once dated Dennis Rivera. She is with a Cordo and Company, which is a small lobbying firm, and she's a heavy, heavyweight lobbyist in Albany, represents the hospital workers. That's her, like, number one ticket, but has many other clients. In fact, the winner of the Aqueduct Entertainment, you know, the Aqueduct franchise, this biggest franchise in the history of the state, has recently signed her firm. So John Marino has done something I've never heard of before, which is that he told me in the course of this story that he was going to restructure the partnership so he did not make a nickel from any of the lobbying of his dear friend Andrew. Now, John Marino was the head of the state party under Mario Cuomo, managed Mario Cuomo's campaigns. If he does that, it's not only does he say he will never lobby Andrew Cuomo personally, but he says he will not make a nickel from any of the lobbying that his firm does. Now, they just created this lobbying wing just a matter of a year ago. They created a lobbying wing of this public relations company, and they hired Allison Lee, who's the wife of Congressman Maurice Hinchey, and she runs the lobbying operation. She also used to work for Andrew, so she clearly will be lobbying Andrew.
So is it healthcare workers and teachers union and one or two particular industries that will most have the in to get his ear?
Well, I don't know whether any of these folks are going to have the in to get his ear. You know, Andrew went through, he had so many different phases of his life. Clearly, lobbyists were an important factor in Albany when he was up there last time. Clearly, they were a factor when he was the head of HUD. But he's had this experience with placement agents in the pension fraud case that may have changed his view of lobbyists, may have changed his view of fixers and inside players. I think we'll know fairly early in his administration. I try to urge him in this story to make some major reforms, and maybe Linda Lacewell, who appears to be in charge of the ethics policies of the governor, will consider some of these reforms. I mean, one of the things I suggest is create an Office of Lobbying Relations where connections won't matter. In other words, you have a bunch of people there who don't know any of the lobbyists, and oftentimes lobbyists have worthwhile information. They have a First Amendment right to present it to government. So channel it all through an office where connections won't matter, and don't let the actual decision makers get face-to-face with the lobbyists. Just limit all of the lobbying information, let it all filter through a apolitical office that you appoint, that's a unit that filters out the best information and just sends the information that lobbyists have to the decision maker without letting the connections impact.
Let's hope he hears you. Let's switch gears here for our remaining minutes. Four former mayors are backing Mayor Bloomberg's decision. Well, let's see. I think it's three former mayors plus the present one, backing the decision to appoint Kathy Black as chancellor of the New York City schools. So you have Bloomberg, Giuliani, Dinkins, and Koch. Maybe the most counterintuitive there is David Dinkins coming out for her. Let's listen.
If the mayor's got the responsibility that each of us has had, then he ought to have the ability to pick the person that he wants, to pick the fire commissioner, the police commissioner, sanitation commissioner that he chooses.
Surprised about David Dinkins joining the parade?
A little bit surprised, but I find it a very, very complicated, you know, a very, very complicated question. I think the mayor deserves the benefit of the doubt on this, because he has made fine appointments across the board in his administration for 9 years. He is a great manager. He understands the selection process for managers. And secondly, because I think he's been a true education reformer. So on two grounds, I give him the benefit of the doubt, but I have an awful lot of doubts. And I just don't think, I wrote a blog yesterday just looking at someone who actually still is associated with the Bloomberg administration, a man named Ernest Hart, who is now the head of the Civilian Complaint Review Board. The Yonkers School Board tried to make him their superintendent and sought a waiver to do so in 2003, shortly after Joel Klein got his. And the same state commissioner, Richard Mills, that gave Klein a waiver, refused to give one to Ernest Hart. Now, if you look at that decision, which I did look at in a blog yesterday, it really raises questions about how the state commissioner, the new state commissioner, David Steiner, could have any consistency with that ruling and grant the waiver to Kathy Black, because the reasoning in the 9-page letter that was offered to deny Ernest Hart as superintendent of Yonkers is about as applicable line by line as a basis for denying one to Kathy Black. I mean, for example, I won't read you the whole thing, but he says, "I find Mr. Hart's inexperience with curriculum, instruction, and assessment to be problematic, given the defined responsibilities of the position and the serious educational challenges facing the Yonkers school system." Well, it's certainly problematic with her. Hart had actually had much more education experience than Kathy Black does at the time that he applied for this job. He was Deputy Mayor Dennis Walcott's top aide, chief of staff, working on the whole new plan for the New York City school system. And he gets denied in Yonkers. It's really hard to find any consistency between these decisions by state commissioners if they deny Hart and they accept Black.
Right. Although they could hang it on all kinds of things, including the different fate of the Yonkers schools and New York City schools over recent years, and their view of the two different mayors, though they may not want to say that publicly. But before you go, here's a comment from our website from a listener who says, regarding Kathy Black, why not split the job in two, chief educator and head of administration? Bloomberg is the boss anyway, writes this listener. What do you think about that? Maybe she'd be a great CFO, and they need somebody else who's sort of the chancellor of education policy.
The only problem with that is the law. You know, the law is very specific about the fact that you have to have a chancellor of the New York City school system. It doesn't divide the job up in two parts. So the mayor is someone who thinks he transcends the law in some respects, but I don't think he thinks he can transcend it that far and have two chancellors effectively. I think it'd be a little bit cumbersome. It's an interesting idea. And in some ways, what you just said is, which is that the only real argument that the city can make in view of this decision regarding Ernest Hart is that effectively there are two chancellors, the one we appoint to run the system with some administrative skills, and then we're going to have a real educator up top. That's essentially, I think, the only basis on which a waiver can be granted, is if they believe there's a real educator who's a deputy to this chancellor who can do the things that she clearly is unequipped to do. I tried to raise in this blog, to me, Brian, there's such a big difference between Klein and this woman, and not just because Kathy Black has absolutely no connection whatsoever to public education, and Klein was a student who went to public schools had a long history of public service and actually had been a teacher briefly in his life. The big difference to me is that there's only 3 years left at maximum here in the Bloomberg administration, unless he becomes president or vice president sooner. There's only 3 years left, whereas there was 8 years staring you in the face when mm-hmm. Klein was named. So if it takes her a year to get up to speed as a new chancellor to have some kind of understanding of how the school system works, then we've invested a year and we only can get a 2-year bonus from it. You know, it's not like this when at the beginning of the Bloomberg administration you could reasonably expect that Joel Klein would have 8 years. He's had, as it turned out, 9. Mm-hmm. So I think when you're appointing someone who's 66 years old and Klein was only 55, you're appointing someone and you're expecting them to start a whole second career. It takes them, I would think, at least a year to get your footing. Joel Klein has said, basically, that it took him a long time to get his footing.
Well, funny enough, the mayor has said it'll take her a few weeks to get up to speed, and then he'll put her out for interviews. So I don't know if people in education are going to be insulted by even that suggestion. What? She could learn all these things in a few weeks? Are we that simple a thing to manage? So anyway, we have to leave it there with Village Voice columnist Wayne Barrett. Oh, hey, do you want to do a little Charlie Rangel prognostication before you go? Will he be censured by the House? Nothing more, nothing less?
He will be censured by the House, absolutely, Brian.
Not expelled, though.
No, he's not going to be expelled, but what really is dismaying is that he ran at all for a term that is this troubled. He should have let the people in that district, after 40 years, pick somebody new. Instead, he's probably, I think, going to hand this seat off to the Democratic County Committee in Manhattan. Will pick the next congressman. I think that's very unfortunate. I don't believe he's going to serve out these 2 years, and I think he's known that for a while.
Wayne Barrett, thanks again.
Bye-bye.
And in case you're interested, listeners, I'll be talking more New York politics on television tonight as a guest on the New York One Reporters Roundtable. That's around 7:30 and 10:30 tonight on New York One. And coming up next right here, the author of a book called Madre, Perilous Journeys with a Spanish Word. And we will take, from you Spanish speakers out there, you bilingual folks, we will take your favorite Spanish phrase that includes the word madre. 212-433-WNYC.